I don't think you'll get many viewers or many listeners of me waffling for an hour and a half. No, but
no. As long as we make sure we cut out the beginning bits, which are I can't hear you. What? I can see you. Oh, I can hear
should,
you.
You should definitely do some outtakes, I reckon.
Yeah. Yeah. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Cyber Sounds. Today, we are thrilled to welcome Colin Hardy, who is the Head of Intrusions and Investigations at TalkTalk PLC. Colin also goes by the avatar CyberCDH, and he has a channel on YouTube with 22,000 subscribers. I'd urge anyone with an interest in cyber threats to check out and subscribe to his channel. Colin, it's great to have you on the pod.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thanks for having me. We've got an awful lot to talk about today. Real fun one with lots of cyber threats going on in the landscape at the moment. So lots to dig into, I guess.
Yeah, there's absolutely tons to talk about. And we're really excited to hear your views about some of the things that are going on at the moment. I suppose as a starting point, I've got to say you've got a very cool title as the Head of Intrusions and Investigations at TalkTalk. Could you just describe for everyone what your role looks like on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm very fortunate to lead a very specialist group of people who are responsible for incident response. So our team is all around identifying, detecting, and protecting the organization from any kind of cyber attack, whether that's against our customers or the corporate environment as well. So we deal with malware, we deal with phishing, we deal with DDoSes, we deal with system vulnerabilities and all that kind of stuff, data privacy incidents, etc. And we have a 24/7 security operations center. We have people focused on customer security, focused on responding to security alerts, all that kind of good stuff. And we have a lot of people who are focused on the technical response to any kind of security incident. And I am a very privileged position to be able to lead that group of people who I get to learn from every day.
Yeah, and you can absolutely see that. And your security operations center that you've got over at Media City is a very, very impressive place to work, having had a tour around there pretty recently. I suppose what would be interesting to know is how you got to where you are now, being head of intrusions at one of the largest telecommunications companies in the UK.
So my journey with information security, it began a few years ago. I guess when I was growing up, I was always that guy who was pretty good at Excel and pretty good at Office, that kind of guy that could write a few macros here and there. And I generally regale the story of my, the kind of hacker mindset that I've always had. I remember as a child-ish, early teenager, I wrote this stupid piece of code on like my Windows 95 computer, whatever it was back in the day, that would automatically update my score on Minesweeper. So every time my dad loaded it up, my score would increment, and he would always wonder like how I did it, because I'd be at school, yeah, I was beating him. So I come home from school, and so he was... And that kind of hacker mindset, I used to love that. And that was something I probably learned from someone, you know, in school who is way better at coding than me. I could never write code or understand anything too technical until I was in my 20s, really. I could cobble a few things together. But I always loved forensics and the criminal investigation. My dad's a cop, or he was a copper, the old police in the old bill. I used to just love listening to all of the stories about the criminal investigations he was involved in. I've got a family full of police officers. I'm really proud of that. So I got a job. I worked in a telecom, in the telecom industry. I worked for O2 for a little while, and I worked there investigating fraud. So there was a lot of fraud, and probably, 10 years ago now, something like that. A lot of mobile phone fraud, a lot of people, identity fraud, that kind of thing. So I had the chance to kind of scratch that itch with investigating crime, but also scratch the itch of dealing with something technical. And so that kind of passion grew and grew. And eventually I found an opportunity to go and work for Bank of America as an incident manager. And I took a course in between that. I took a course, a free online course with Harvard called CS50. And it was like an introduction to computer science. And I remember taking that course, and one of the P sets, one of the problem sets that you had to solve, you had to write a bit of code. And it was to, you had to write some code that would recover deleted files from like a memory card or what have you. And I honestly thought it was magic, like being able to like write a piece of code to recover stuff that no one else can see. And that really just sent me down the rabbit hole of learning, you know, a bit more about computer science and all the rest of it. So I got this job in the Bank of America, and my introduction into cybersecurity was just accelerated through the way that business is structured, and how they operate, and the focus that they have on cybersecurity is just unbelievable. A real pressure pot, but you see every kind of attack from day one, and you're responding to incidents, multiple incidents a day, and fighting fires, and you have a baptism of fire in that kind of environment. And then I really fell in love with the malware space. I really loved investigating malware, getting closer to the bad guys again, that kind of criminal investigation, and being able to pick stuff apart, that forensic kind of review of stuff really appeals to me. And so I specialized in reverse engineering malware for a few years whilst I was at the bank, and managed to turn that into somehow building an incident response team here at TalkTalk, which is something, again, so, you know, an organization I'm really proud to work for, and a team of technical specialists who are far superior to my technical capabilities. And I'm really pleased that I get to learn from them by working with them every day as well. So
how many are in your team now?
There's about 25.
Okay.
So I lead the security operations and response team. So we have a 24/7 security operations center. We're focused on identifying and responding to any kind of attack against our customers or the corporate environment. And then also a team of specialist incident responders as well. So guys who, you know, can reverse engineer malware, perform forensics, cyber threat intelligence, that kind of thing. So, yeah, very diverse, very skilled team.
You mentioned that you're in love with malware, and it's clear that you have a real passion for it, and you watch your YouTube videos where you're sort of deconstructing the malware and reverse engineering it, trying to understand what it does. And there's, in a funny way, there's a real kind of art to it, and there's a beauty to it, which I don't necessarily understand. But clearly you have the expertise to understand how the malware works and how it operates. And in a sense, you also have the opportunity to use that malware for malicious purposes if you were so inclined to do that, because you have that awareness. And when you look at what some of the larger criminal organizations and threat groups are making out of, say, ransomware, you know, there's talk about GandCrab making, I think it was about $2.5 million every week from ransomware. And it must be difficult for someone, I'm not talking about you, but someone in your position who has that capability, that expertise, to stay on the right side of the tracks, because there's a huge amount of money waiting there for people with your kind of skill set who go off to the dark side, as it were. And aligned to that is the fact that you're probably never going to get caught if you start launching attacks, because certainly from where we sit, you know, the police often get involved, but it's, as you mentioned earlier, attribution is almost impossible. So what stops people like you, who have the expertise, turning to the dark side and using your expertise for malicious purposes?
Yeah, well, I think it's a great question. And it's a real tricky one to answer, but I think the best way I can describe it is around the motivation. I think, yes, you know, I've seen enough malware that I could go and write some malware that's pretty sophisticated and infiltrate organizations and do some damage. But, you know, I think people who work in the industry don't necessarily have that motivation to do that. And that kind of criminal streak. Usually, I guess, there's a lot of financial motivation. So, yes, if you wanted to make some money from ransomware, it's an extremely lucrative environment, as you say. But I think there is a risk that you can get caught. If you follow the money trail enough, if you make a big enough noise within the landscape, you're going to get noticed, and there will be a significant investigation around that. I think what I like, and it's interesting, I interviewed someone recently, a chap called Mike Jones, who is once described as a cyber terrorist because of his activities and his underground criminal activities with respect to hacking. And he's now a reformed character that does a lot of public speaking around this. And his mindset, he was working in the industry. He was working for a financial institution, and he was protecting the environment by day, but also leaking information by night to underground threat groups. And as you suggest, making a lot of money, all the rest of it. But his motivation was more political, an activist, an hacktivist, that kind of mindset, because he didn't agree with stuff the business was doing and therefore wanted to do something outside of that within a community to try and counter it. And eventually got caught. You know, this guy was working in the industry, an expert cyber hacker, but he got caught eventually. And so I guess it's that, you know, for me personally, I'd always suggest that, you know, it's the wrong path to go down, because there's too much money to be made, if that's your motivation, in cybersecurity as an industry. It's a very lucrative place to come and work if you've got some skills. If you want to go hacking, you can still do that. You can still do it legitimately. You can be a red teamer. And so you can actually hack into organizations legitimately in order to test their controls and get paid for it. And there's a massive bug bounty community as well. And there are people who earn literally millions of dollars through finding bugs through platforms like HackerOne and BugCrowd and all the rest of it. These are actually ex-criminals as well, some of them. There's a very famous or infamous, whatever you want to call it, guy called Tommy DeVos, who goes by the moniker as Doggy G. But, you know, he's, by his own admission, he's a stoner, you know, out there in Texas or whatever, or Virginia, I think he lives in the US. He was, you know, he's had, as a younger man, had his doors broken down by the FBI. He's been in prison, all the rest of it, for hacking offenses. And then he comes out into the real world and he realizes, wow, I could have done all of this legitimately and earned a load of money. And guess what he is? He's like earning million, 2 million a year just by finding vulnerabilities in other companies. So that feeds his passion for hacking, but he does it legitimately and he does it for the good of the internet. And he's not causing anyone any problems. So there are places for people to go, if you like, to exercise and scratch that itch. But not everyone will. And unfortunately, that's the game that we're in. So, you know, there's always going to be bad guys. There's always going to be nation state actors. There's going to be criminal groups, etc.
I think it's because you've got a family full of coppers, Colin.
Yeah, that as well. Yeah, that wouldn't go down too well at the dinner table, I don't think. So.
So, Colin, presumably you have a lot of formal qualifications in this space. But have you ever passed ransomware or racehorse?
I think this is, I have a space on my wall for another certificate, and this could well fill it, hopefully.
Well, it wouldn't be ransomware or racehorse without Ollie doing the slightly creepy announcement, which we need to record it and then just play that every time, just to like patch that in.
Love it.
So, Colin, are you ready to play ransomware or racehorse?
I think I'm ready.
Fantastic. Well, over to Lizzie. I think you've got the questions ready.
Oh, yeah, I have some options. So, Colin, the first one is... Oh, actually, firstly, I should say we're going to make it a little bit harder for you because you are an expert. So some of them, it's going to be ransomware, racehorse, or both. So there are some that are both a racehorse and a type of ransomware. So beware of those. Right. So The first one, Number one, Uncle Snakey. Is it ransomware or
Uncle Snakey. There's no way that I can be ransomware. There's got to be a racehorse. I'll go racehorse.
You're correct. Very well done. Yes.
That's a great name for a horse.
I just love the name so much. Okay, number two. So this one, is this going to be ransomware, racehorse, or both? Le Chiffre.
Le Chiffre. It sounds very exotic. Bad guys like exotic names for their ransomware. So I'm going to say both on this one.
Actually, unbelievably, yes, it is both.
Yes, I love it. Get in there.
I really like your reasoning for it as well. I like the fact that Le Chiffre, he's actually the bad guy in Casino Royale. You know, the villain who's played by Mads Mikkelsen. And apparently in French, it means the cipher, which is very sexy, or Mr. Number, which I think is much less sexy name.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
No one wants to be called Mr. Number.
I like it.
Okay, doing very well. Let's go for another one. Okay. Right. So is this ransomware, racehorse, or both? Naughty Gnome.
It's got to be a racehorse. It can't be ransomware, surely.
Yes, again.
Get in. I love this game. Great game.
Should we do another one? Should we keep going?
Yeah.
Best of five.
We want to trip you up eventually. You're doing too well.
Okay.
Next one. So ransomware, racehorse, or both. Which one should we go for? Tycoon.
Tycoon. I'll say that's a piece of ransomware.
Ransomware. It is, in fact, both.
Okay.
It's a half. You were correct.
Half right. Okay. Tycoon. Nice.
Tycoon. There's quite a few, actually, that are both, which is interesting. I don't know what that says about the names of ransomware or the names of ransomware.
Maybe you cracked it. Maybe you cracked the code of how they name this malware. You know, I love it.
Should we do one more for the road?
Yeah, we'll do one more. So what's your... You've got... Well, it's kind of like 3.5 out of 4, really. So... Number five, is this ransomware, racehorse, or both? Clop.
Ooh.
C-L-O-P.
That's a tricky one. I've definitely never heard of it in the ransomware space, so I'm just going to say it's a racehorse.
It is actually ransomware, not racehorse.
No way! I love it.
So one of the things we wanted to talk about today was the future of cyber attacks. And where are we going to be in, say, 10 years' time? As we all know, cyber attacks are getting ever larger, more sophisticated. And this is only going to get more prevalent as time goes on. And I suppose for you, Colin, working at such a large organization like TalkTalk, this sort of thing must be on your agenda all the time.
Absolutely. So, you know, TalkTalk is part of the critical national infrastructure. And it's super important that our systems are stable and secure in order to give everybody access to the internet. I think, you know, you look at today's day and age, in the age of COVID, when everyone is, or a lot of people are working remotely, kids at home in lockdown, all the rest of it, the internet is so important and fundamental to people's lives, almost as a utility. So protecting that. And protecting the capabilities of the network and being able to run effectively as a business is high priority, if not number one priority within the business. So yeah, looking at where the next attacks are going to come from is a constant battle. You know, bad guys, as you alluded to, they're really smart. They keep evolving. There is an ever advancing cyber threat landscape, which it's complicated to keep up with. Just the sheer volume of information that you have to process as a business in order to understand what threats are pertinent to your environment. What do you really need to worry about as a business? You know, what vulnerabilities, what exploits are relevant to your business may not be relevant to somebody else's. And threat profiles are different. You know, you might be working in a company delivering food and stuff, and your all of your kind of cyber attack profile, if you like, your threat profile modeling is all around keeping that service alive. Whereas if you run a critical national infrastructure business, you're being targeted by nation state threat actors who are interested in your intellectual property. They might be interested in the data that you hold, etc., as well as organized criminal groups, hacktivist, activists, whatever you want to call them, bedroom kind of hackers as well. The whole range of criminals, really. And being able to understand their motivations, their capabilities, and also work out, you know, where best to invest your money and build your defenses around the wall is absolutely a constant battle. But a fun one.
You allude to the fact that there is such a diverse range of cyber criminals out there, from that bedroom teenager to nation states, which is just quite incredible. Sometimes what the people I'm talking to, they actually can't believe it when I tell them that nation states are behind these attacks, and we're dealing with cyber incidents that are, you know, when you follow them to the top of the chain, there are connections to Russia, to North Korea, various other nations. And I think a lot of people just assume that that's all you know, something that's in the movies, but it's real life stuff that is happening on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. Some of the cyber attacks do sound like a movie plot. I mean, one of my favorites is the Bangladesh bank heist. I mean, automatically, it's got a great title that you think that would be an amazing book or an Ocean's 11 sequel or what have you. State-sponsored North Korean threat actors, motivations who are probably financial as opposed to political. But if you can imagine that, you know, the sanctions that are against a country like North Korea, and that the trade sanctions and their capacity to earn money or revenue from outside of their own country is reasonably limited. Well, how do they function as a country, as a society? Well, in their terms at the moment, they'll go and steal the money. And the great Bangladesh bank heist is a prime example of some amazing capability that, you know, government state-sponsored attackers have, infiltrating a bank's network. And for anyone who's not familiar with the story, I definitely recommend going and Googling it. And there's an amazing book by a chap called Jeff White called crime.com. And it covers this in a significant amount of detail as well. The bad guys infiltrated the Bangladesh bank. They moved around the network until they found the terminals that were responsible for issuing SWIFT payments, and managed to install some custom written malware onto those terminals to then generate payments to the tune of $1 billion from Bangladesh's bank accounts in the Federal Reserve of New York into bank accounts in the Philippines, where they were siphoned off. It literally is just out of a movie. But you think this is real world capability that you're right, goes on all of the time. And it's a constant problem. The nation state stuff is an interesting angle as well. You can imagine there's political motivations behind their kind of attacks. You know, the Russians may well want to infiltrate US critical national infrastructure, and not necessarily perform anything malicious per se, but they may want to have access in case they want to do something. So oftentimes you actually find malware that may not do an awful lot in those environments until it receives a certain command. And so knowing the actual true intentions behind these attacks is often sometimes quite complicated to determine.
Yeah, and I suppose that's where your security operations center comes in terms of understanding what's happening out there, looking at threat analysis and using your resource to stay one step ahead of the bad guys.
What you touched on there is, you know, the security maturity journey that we've been on over the last few years. I think quite famously, TalkTalk suffered a data breach back in 2015, which seems like ancient history for us. And admittedly, I wasn't there for that. So I can always, you know, talk about this and give them a good kicking because I wasn't there. But I guess that really put security on the map within the business. And 5 years ago, I dare say that many organizations with respect to their security were in a very different place. And the threat landscape has moved on dramatically as well. Certainly over the past 3 or 4 years or so, following the attack, there's been a significant ramp up in our security maturity capability, which has really been driven by our CISO, someone, again, I'm super proud to work for. But I think focusing on security maturity, when you look at like your people, your process, your technology is one thing. And that's a big part, obviously, right? Being able to enhance each of those areas. You've got to have the right people. You've got to have the right processes. And they've also got to have the right technology to play with to build your wall and defend it as well. But really, where we've kind of succeeded is what is probably termed as like CISO maturity. And what I mean by that is how well security is placed within the business. And I think a lot of businesses, you know, similar size to TalkTalk, we got a couple of thousand employees, you know, businesses in and around the same kind of size don't have the same kind of security structure that we have. They maybe outsource a lot of their capability to managed service providers, which is perfectly fine. And, you know, that's, you know, different environments suit different needs. But maybe like security isn't, it doesn't have the same seat at the table as many other parts of the business because it's a drain on the resource. It's a drain on the bottom line. Security costs business money to run. And it's always, you know, a difficult conversation to keep going back to people asking for more money to invest in stuff that's going to take it off the bottom line. Whereas TalkTalk see that differently. Probably, I would say, down to the 2015 history that they have a direct security, our CISO has a direct report into our board, has a seat at that table. There's a whole governance structure in place and it's taken so seriously. Any kind of issue with relation to security is briefed to the CEO. And Tristia, our chief exec, is very switched on to any kind of security issue. Yes, there are investment challenges. Yes, there's resource challenges within the teams, but we're always positioned and protected in this business because it's so important to the fabric of the organization. And that's, for me personally, that's what makes it a very appealing place to work as well, because you know that security is taken really seriously.
You talk about maturity. It's an interesting word, isn't it? And I just wondered what you kind of mean by that and how do you measure maturity in an organization? Because I guess maturity means different things to different companies.
Yeah, absolutely. So within TalkTalk, we align to the NIST cybersecurity framework, which goes into quite granular detail as to what kind of controls you should have and what processes you should have to build a successful cybersecurity framework within the business. And then what we do is we couple all of those. It's like, I don't know what there is, like 150 or so requirements of those line items. And we literally score each one of them between 0 and 5 as to how mature we are. And we have this independently audited as well. We don't mark our own homework too much. And that maturity is all about, you know, do you have defined processes? Do you have the right people to run these processes? Do you have the right technology? And then do you embrace automation? Do you give back to the community? You know, all those kind of things kind of factor into that score between 0 and 5. And you can imagine back in 2015 or early post 2015, when that assessment was done, the score wasn't great. The maturity score was not there because they hadn't had time to invest in the people, the process, the controls, etc. And so I think the key to the success so far has been developing in that order, bringing the right people in first, then developing the processes, and then building the technology on top, as opposed to going out and buying a new shiny tool, but no one's there to run it. And so kind of executing that formula and building that maturity and having, again, one of the key, I take no credit for this whatsoever. My CISO is, you know, has executed a very good strategy here for maturity, but building that relationship with the board, so they're bought into the journey that, you know, security is not a tick box. Security is not a quick fix that you can just throw, you know, some money at. This is a long-term 3, 5, 7 year plan that will see growth if the business supports you. And we're now in a bit, you know, as a business, we're now in a position where we're actually able to look back to the marketplace, to our business customers, and start to sell to them security services as a managed service provider, because we have, as you can imagine, as a an internet service provider, a lot of capability. You know, we have a lot of DDoS mitigation controls because we are the internet for 4.5 million people, and so we can offer that as a service to businesses. Same with threat intelligence, and the same with incident response, etc. So we're starting to approach the market with that, and it seems, you know, the tail wagging the dog almost, because of our history and because of what we've been through. But that's actually really come into our favor, because we've been through it and we know what it's like, and we know how to defend against these complicated attacks. And, you know, being part of critical national infrastructure, we have a lot of intelligence about what different types of sectors see with respect to cyber threats as well. So yeah, it's nice to be able to hopefully start giving back to the community in that way as well.
Have we run out of your impressions?
I know, yeah, there's no impressions.
Have we run out?
I don't know, I think I've retired from impressions, to be honest.
I think you've done your two. Grossman and Alan Bennett.
Yeah.
I think, okay. I'll be honest, Tom, you did a good Grossman. I'll give you that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I've got to be in the right frame of mind, and to be honest, I've got a kind of like a dwindling audience that understands who it is I'm talking about. If I do anyone at work who's sort of below, I don't know, 30,
I think
even you, Liz, I had to send you a video.
You did.
No.
I recognized the name from the little jars of sauce, but the
bolognese.
We need to get Lloyd Grossman back in the public domain,
yeah,
purely so my really bad impression is more relevant.
I agree.
Maybe
we could try and get him on the pod. Yeah.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Lloyd, if you're listening, please come and speak to us.
I think that's a good note to end it, I reckon.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us. I think it's been absolutely fascinating.
My pleasure. And very glad for you to have me on.
No, it's an absolute pleasure.
When the world goes back to normal, we'll have to have a beer. And can we also come and sample your amazing canteen lunches again?
You're more than welcome to.
Absolutely epic.
Yeah, definitely. I will definitely treat you all to lunch. My pleasure. Absolutely. In the year 2025, when we're all allowed to.
Yeah.
When we're on the fourth vaccine.
Talking Russian. Yeah, all sound like Lord Grossman, probably. Yeah.